All right. Well, for the next, you know, the next few weeks after today, we're going to get to the most practical part of this how to, you know, make disciples section. We're going to get into kind of, yeah, the actual how-tos. We've been talking a lot about making disciples the past couple weeks. You know, still, we're only going to be able to, of course, dip in like an intro, but still some vital first steps. But today's message, I believe, is really important. And in fact, so much so that I believe that if we take today's message seriously, building on what we've been talking about going back to May, with no other training, we would become a disciple-making church like never before. You know, again, if we begin by resting, trusting fully in the gospel like we talked about back in May, and then build from that rest into our relationship with Jesus through spiritual disciplines, that we're continuing to know and love him more, and then in obedience, take on the calling of our life to be disciple makers, and if we then, because of that, begin to live as salt and light, like we discussed last week, and we take the step we're going to discuss today, we're going to become growing disciple makers with no other skill set. Today, what I want to talk about is I want to talk about pearls. You know, pearls are beautiful, aren't they? I should have thrown a picture of a pearl in there, but you all know what pearls look like. You know, they're these precious things, and it's interesting, though today we can grow them commercially, so they're still expensive, but they were even more precious in the days when Jesus talked about pearls. In fact, book of Revelation, John describes each gate into the heavenly Jerusalem to be a giant pearl. They were actually more precious than diamonds because they were harder to acquire. Anybody can dig. But in a world before scuba, getting a pearl was something that took a great deal. It was dangerous. They were almost too rare to be useful as an illustration. You don't see them mentioned very much in the Old Testament. Jesus brings them up, though, as he's closing out the Sermon on the Mount with some interesting application for us as we consider disciple-making. So I want to begin here with Matthew 7:6. Probably not a verse you've taken the time to memorize. Not one of those verses that's going to end up on a coffee cup. Though the last time I said that, someone made me a coffee cup with it on it, so now it is on a coffee cup. But we'll see. Matthew 7:6. Don't give what is holy to dogs, or toss your pearls before pigs, or they will trample them under their feet, turn, and tear you to pieces. Believe it or not, good verse for disciple-making here. It's valuable for us first to consider how Jesus' audience would have understood this strange expression. And I can only do a little bit of an intro here into the cultural context. I would always encourage you to dive in a little bit deeper. Josh and I were talking about this morning, about how much the context gives us kind of a foundation to take these thoughts and ideas and build on them. The reference to what is being wholly tossed to dogs would have brought images of your temple offerings in the Old Testament. You would take, you know, and you would make sacrifices that once offered to the Lord, those became set apart. They were sacred. And much of that meat would then be either eaten by the priests, or in some cases you would make an offering, and then the priest would give it back to you, and you would eat it in the presence of the Lord. It was actually like, it was a relational meal with him, but it was holy. It was now something sacred and set apart. Again, some really cool study to dive into if you're interested. But to throw it to the dogs would be an abomination. It would be unheard of. It would be nonsense. Like, no one would do that. You know, dogs weren't pets then. I was just talking about pets with the kids. Dogs were not typically pets. You know, I don't know if Matthew really had a dog, if you've watched The Chosen, but that would have been very atypical. Not normal. They were unclean street animals. At best, there were some work dogs, guard dogs, etc., but even in Israel, that was rare. But worse than dogs were pigs. This was the apex of the list of unclean animals in the Old Testament when, you know, things were being divided up, and Israel was, again, though in Genesis we read God gave all food to people, when he called out Israel, he gave them an identity based on some of these kinds of things, like not eating or touching pigs. It was a way of saying we're a distinct people. And so to touch or eat a pig would be unclean. It's the reason that Jesus, when he's telling the story of the prodigal son, he mentions that this was how bad it got. He ran off and had to help tend pigs. And that was meant to get the listeners going, it can't get any worse than that. You see, for them, they had a list of unclean animals, things that were acceptable and unacceptable for them before the Lord. And these purity laws were at the heart of their identity as a people. So when Jesus says not to give what is holy to dogs or giving pearls to pigs, he's using really strong language to make this point. But the question is, what is the point that he's trying to make here? On its own, just take the verse at surface level, what I kind of start to think is that maybe Jesus is telling us not to share holy and precious truth. Or, you know, if we are holy, we're not to mingle with those things that aren't holy. You know, don't take what's best and give it to the undesirables, the sinners and such. But if we put it in the paragraph that surrounds it, that interpretation doesn't make any sense. Matthew 7, 1 through 5, these are the verses that precede this line right here. Do not judge so that you won't be judged. For you will be judged by the same standard with which you judge others, and you will be measured by the same measure you use. Why do you look at the splinter in your brother's eye, but don't notice the beam of wood in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the splinter out of your eye, and look, there's a beam of wood in your own eye? Hypocrite. First take the beam of wood out of your eye. This is good optometry lessons too, if you're aspiring to that. And then you will see clearly to take the splinter out of your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, etc., etc. That's the flow of thought that Jesus is making here. Same paragraph. So is Jesus immediately following up saying, do not judge, with saying, except for the pigs, of course. Now, of course, now it's worth noting that the natural inclination of Jewish listeners would be to connect these words to Gentiles. But Jesus has kind of flipped the script on them a little bit here by putting it together with this. It doesn't quite fit, and scholars and pastors through the ages have wrestled with this text. It's a difficult and complicated one, and there are a few different views that are helpful to us, especially as we seek to be disciple makers. And so I actually want to look at a few different views that scholars and pastors have taken, that each one of them is valuable to us. And that's something, you know, worth noting. Jesus was a Jewish teacher, and one of the things that Jewish rabbis love to do is bury treasure. They like to say one thing and get you to think really hard about it and get you to keep going deeper. So I want to talk about pearls here. The number one thing, one view, is that pearls are precepts. Pearls are precepts. You'll notice I'm using a lot of alliteration this morning. It's one of those things us pastors have to learn to do in school. Pearls are precepts. You know, it's the very end, where chapter 7 is the end of the Sermon on the Mount. So he could be talking here about all that he's taught before. Do what you've heard. Do what you've heard me talk about, chapters 5 and 6. Not that Jesus, you know, wrote them out as chapters 5 and 6, but, you know, taking that text and going, everything you've heard me teach, these are pearls. And so do them. Be salt and light. Live well. You go back to Matthew 5, 16 that we talked about last week. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. That would reinforce what we talked about last week. Jesus would, in essence, be saying here, I've given you pearls, I've given you holy gifts here in these truths. It would not only be disgraceful, but destructive to toss them away, to toss these things out, to throw them away. A little later, he'll talk about a house built with no foundation as a picture of those who listen but don't do. You know, maybe the pearls aren't people at all, or maybe the pigs aren't people at all, but a picture of how we can use the holy things in our lives, how we can just throw them away. And to highlight it in its context, again, he's established our need to give grace. Isn't that what the last precept he gave us is do not judge. And he's, don't throw that precept away. That's a holy pearl for us. For us to judge another would be taking that holy gift and tossing it to the pigs, wouldn't it? If we've come to recognize our desperate need for grace and then we refuse to give it to someone else, that would be taking a pearl and throwing it to the pigs. Paul gives us some wisdom that resonates here. 1 Thessalonians 4:11 and 12 says, giving advice, saying to seek to live a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, so that you may behave properly in the presence of outsiders and not to be dependent on anyone. Don't run around fixing everyone else's junk. Mind your own. Do the work in front of you. Why? Because it shows something to those who are outside the church. It shows who we are. So the first view here is a nice callback to last week and a reminder that a part of living holy is showing grace. So another view here is that the pearls are people. That the pearls are people. Oh, here we thought the pigs were the people. What if it's the pearls that are the people? Again, in the context of do not judge, maybe there's something here. Specifically, what if the pearls are the people that we are inclined to judge? What if the pearls are the people with the speck in their eye? What if the pearls are those that maybe we'd be most inclined to judge? And the warning is don't toss those people away. Don't ignore them. Don't just leave them out there. It's interesting that Paul in Philippians, you'll hear a little bit some familiar thing, Philippians 3:2, he says, watch out for the dogs, watch out for the evil workers, watch out for those who mutilate the flesh. And who he's talking about there specifically are the religious leaders who are hyper-focused on making sure everyone follows Jewish religious laws. And he uses that word that we just heard Jesus use, dogs. Just don't throw them to the dogs. Don't toss those who are holy to the dogs. They were ready to toss away people who didn't fit their expectations. And I think this is an area where we can very easily fall into this trap of kind of going, this person doesn't quite match what I would expect or what I'm looking for. I'm gonna read a story from John chapter 8. I'm not going to put it on the screen because I don't want you to read it. Instead, what I want you to do is listen. And I want you to try to imagine this story through the lens of pearl and pigs. Or something holy and dogs. Whatever metaphor, you know, is easiest for you to imagine. And I think you'll see it pretty quickly here as I read it. John 8, 3 through 11. Says, then the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, making her stand in the center. Teacher, they said to him, this woman was caught in the act of committing adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. What do you say? They asked this to trap him in order that they might have evidence to accuse him. Jesus stooped down, started writing on the ground with his finger. When they persisted in questioning him, he stood up and said to them, the one without sin among you should be the first to throw a stone at her. Then he stooped down again and continued writing on the ground. When they heard this, they left one by one, starting with the older men. Only he was left with the woman in the center. When Jesus stood up, he said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, Lord, she answered. Neither do I condemn you, said Jesus. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore. There was something tossed into the middle of the square in front of Jesus. What did Jesus see? He saw a pearl. He saw a pearl there in the middle of the square, and he had the opportunity to either toss it back to the pigs or to see it as a pearl. From one of my favorite chapters in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. Therefore, we are ambassadors of Christ, since God is making his appeal through us. We plead on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. I think what I took away as I considered this point of view is, what if our first job with the sinner of any kind wasn't to fix their sin, but to see them? Just to see them the way he sees them. Beautiful pearls, more precious than a diamond. Holy, just at the very least, they have a holiness that is in them by virtue of being image bearers of God. Precious treasures that Jesus died for. If that was our first job. So we become ambassadors of reconciliation, not throwing out, not casting our pearls, not throwing what's holy to the dogs, but drawing in. Many scholars also note that pearls are precious. Pearls are precious. If pearls are precepts, you know, maybe even we could take the gospel itself as the greatest of those precepts, and not just to be tossed about, something that we don't just throw around willy-nilly. It's a weird expression. Author Dallas Willard wrote of this passage, in his commentary on this passage, he wrote that we need to be careful in the way we minister to others, that even when we know we have all the right answers, if others are not ready for them, the right answers can do more harm than good. Pigs that try to eat pearls will be hurt by them, he says. They can't be digested or made use of, and the result is hurt to both the minister and the one ministered to. Consider that Jesus himself was mindful about what he said and to who. He didn't just throw his teaching around to anyone, anywhere. He gave people what they were able to receive. He used parables, specifically, he said, so that those with ears to hear might hear. But others would hear it and go, I'm not sure what he just said. And they were left wondering and figuring it out, and maybe at some point that would sink in, but maybe that time wasn't now. Well, his disciples didn't get it. They had to have him explain it. But Jesus wanted those who had ears to hear, those who were ready to receive. Paul, again, says it this way in Colossians 4. He says, act wisely towards outsiders, making the most of the time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you should answer each person. I think I'd missed kind of that last part. I think even as I've taught through Colossians before, I thought more about the first part, about let's make sure what we say is gracious and seasoned with salt. But to even consider, with this person, what is the best communication to have? What should I share here? What are they ready to receive? What makes sense for this person that I'm talking to? Am I treating the precepts? Am I treating the truths of God's word as precious things? But it's also worth noting, if the people are pearls, they're precious as well. And as we think about how do we take precious precepts and precious people and make sure we're connecting those dots. During my Youth for Christ days, we had the chance at a big kind of national convention of Youth for Christ leaders to learn from a man who worked specifically with people in the LGBTQ community, trying to preach the gospel to them in a way they could hear and receive. We had a Q&A session with him afterwards, and there were a lot of practical questions because, you know, Youth for Christ, we worked exclusively in public schools, in a very tricky setting, to be able to do it in a way that where we were had to respect the boundaries that we had, and we were also trying to reach kids who were just struggling to figure life out. And so there was a lot of great questions, but one of the questions I think almost everyone had, because we had all been in this situation that someone finally voiced, was what do we do when a kid comes up to us and asks us point blank, what do you believe about me? Or what do you believe about this issue? And he paused for a minute and gave, I think, the best answer I've ever heard on this. This applies to any of the controversial topics and any of the, what's the opposite of controversial? Traversial? I just made up a new word. You're welcome. What he said is kind of said, you know, a lot of people who ask a question like that are actually just looking for a fight. They're looking for an excuse to dismiss you. Because all they have to do is find evidence that proves that you are exactly who they think you are. Don't we all do that with people who disagree with us on a topic? If I can just find one little key that tells me you are who I think you are, then I can dismiss everything else you have to say, point blank. I'm just as guilty as that as anybody else. But sometimes that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the gotcha. Some are honestly seeking answers because there's something going on inside of them where they're like, I'm trying to figure out what God has to speak. I feel like God wants to say something to me, but I'm just not sure how to deal with these things. And he said, in the end, don't answer the question, at least not now. He says, instead, he says what he would respond with is, it sounds like you want to talk about theology. I only talk about theology with my friends because it's something that can be really divisive, and I value you. I value my relationship with you, and I wouldn't want to put that in jeopardy. Can we get to know one another better? Like, I don't feel like I know you well enough to have that conversation. Could we grab coffee and just, I want to hear your story. I'd like to get to know you. I want to understand you because I value you. And I promise then I'll answer that question. But it's important that we take this step first. And he gave some great follow-up on that, but that was the foundation of it. In essence, what he said was, the question's important, but you matter more. I see you. You matter to me. And he said, the gotcha people will normally bail out at that point. They'll be like, ah, okay, congratulations, you didn't get trapped. But the honest seekers would lean in, and he would have the chance to show them, he would have the chance to, rewind to last week, be salt and light in front of them and honor the questioner to live it out. You know, I haven't mentioned bonsai yet today. I know you were all waiting. You were all anticipating it. When's he going to? He keeps bringing it up every week. Well, I figure it's about time now. As I started, rescuing plants and planting seedlings, and I've got I've got more than a dozen, bonsai in process in my backyard. I kept thinking to myself early on, I was like, wow, these beauties are going to be amazing gifts. Like, as I increase in skill, like as I get good at this, and I've got all these, trees and pots that just look amazing, like these will make great gifts. And in fact, if we would have rewound 5 years and someone said, hey, would you like a bonsai as a gift? I probably, yeah, that's an amazing gift, because I didn't understand bonsai at the time. See, because I'm not just giving, so I wouldn't just be giving someone a beautiful gift, I'm also giving them a responsibility. And not everyone wants that responsibility. Several years ago for Mother's Day, instead of just buying my wife flowers, I planted some. And I did a tomato plant, and I planted a whole little garden for her on her back deck, the rental we were at. And she's like, that's great. Thanks. And she was very gracious and loving, but she's also like, so are you going to water them too? Is that part of the gift? Because otherwise you just gave me a chore. Bonsai require, I've talked about this a little bit before, they require diligence and patience and like learning and education. It's not a gift just for anyone. And I'm starting to realize as I go that as I share what I'm doing with kids and friends and family, I will be excited to give them away, but I'm going to have to be thoughtful about who I give them to. It may not be that the first time they express interest in it, I'll be like, well, here, take one. I'll have to be discerning. How bad would they feel if they took something that I'd put years of investment into and wasted it by neglect or lack of understanding? What I meant to be a blessing would end up being a curse. And if the people and precepts are pearls, we need to be just as wise in the sharing. Are they prepared to receive it? Do they understand what they're getting? Do they value it? If I haven't shown them that I value them, that I see them, that I recognize them as pearls. Last one I will bring up, though there are plenty more, is that pearls require persistence. As I mentioned earlier, pearls were harder to come by than diamonds. Apart from scuba gear and, you know, nice factory oyster farms where you could just have a whole bunch all together, it was dangerous work and slow work. The question for us is, what is worth seeking that way? What is worth seeking like a pearl? Just a few verses before our passage today, Jesus says this, and this is an often memorized one. This one you could find on a coffee cup or a calendar. Matthew 6:33. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be provided to you. He says this in the context of worrying about so many things we could be distracted by. He says, seek the kingdom. He says, the kingdom is the thing worth seeking. Don't worry about stuff. Seek the kingdom. That's what really resting in the gospel and the spiritual disciplines are all about. It's about seeking Jesus and his kingdom. What is his world? The world that Jesus intends to create, that he's invited us as his image bearers to help him create. What does that world look like? And as we get to know Jesus and we get to know his kingdom, we start to see what matters most to the king. And as we love him, we begin to value what he values. If we're seeking first the kingdom, we're going to begin to value what the king values. Jump over to Luke 19:10. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. And Jesus, what did Jesus, the one who ushered in the kingdom, what is he seeking? The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. That's why I often say that a church that's loving God completely and loving people in community can't help but partner with God in making disciples contagiously. If we're really doing that in the world that God's put us in, if we're really bringing his kingdom, if we're loving God and seeking his kingdom, we're going to love what he loves. Apparently, these pearls are worth persistence. And the more I know Jesus and the more I see the value in those that my instincts, my culture, my worldview would say toss aside, would say ignore, would say walk past, the difficult and the disagreeable, the poor, the powerless, the lost, the fearful, the pearls. There's another verse that's often misunderstood that I think fits well here. Matthew 13:45-46 says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. This is the other New Testament reference to pearls outside of Revelation. In search of fine pearls, and when he has found one priceless pearl, he went and sold everything he had and bought it. And I know I've read that a million times, growing up and learning. So that's right. The kingdom is like a pearl that we must give up everything to get. But that's not what it says, is it? It's not untrue that the kingdom is of high value and that we should give up everything, but this is not what this verse says. This verse isn't talking about that. In its context, Jesus actually tells a whole number of parables where he keeps saying, this is what the kingdom is like. This is what the kingdom is like. This is what the kingdom is like. And again, he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. The kingdom of heaven is not, I'm not saying it's not like a pearl. Obviously, the gates are made of pearls, but he's saying, but the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. And what's the merchant doing? The merchant's in search of fine pearls. And when he found one priceless pearl, he went and sold everything he had and bought it. You are a pearl. That the merchant sought and looked for, and when he found you, He gave everything he had to get you. Where you had guilt before God, he paid that debt. Where you were covered in shame, he restored honor and glory. Where you lived in fear, he became your power and peace. And now you are a part of the kingdom. You are now part of the kingdom. You are the body of Christ. You are the merchant searching for fine pearls. And once you find one, you wouldn't dream of tossing it to the pigs, right? Instead, you would give up everything. Give up anything. Let me have the worship team come back up. I said, and don't you forget it. I said in the beginning that if we've rested in the gospel, grown in our relationship with Jesus through spiritual disciplines, and then live as salt and light, if we just do this, apart from any of the practical tips that I'll offer over the next few weeks on disciple making, if we just do this, we'll be more and more effective disciple makers. Okay, so how does that work? How does this make that kind of a difference? You know, I haven't offered any how-tos. I've given zero step-by-step plans. I haven't even given you like the kind of difficult, you know, directions that come with IKEA furniture, where that thing you bought on Amazon that was written by someone who once watched a documentary on English but never actually heard it spoken. We've all bought those things off Amazon, right? So why will this do more than all of the practical steps that are coming over the next 3 weeks? I think it's because the most important thing you can do in disciple making is see people. The most important thing you can do in disciple making is just simply see people. It's funny, in the bonsai class, there it is again, sorry, Fabio taught us to pay attention, not just with our own, but with trees, like out as you're going through the forest. You know, you just learn to pay attention to like that place where the trunk meets the ground, the nabari, if you're interested in vocabulary. He taught us to, you notice that, to consider the story behind how a tree got to be the way it is. And I have since that class irritated everyone I've hiked with by stopping at half of the trees we passed in order to wonder, like, why is the root like that and this going like here and what combination of erosion and soil composition and weather and all this kind of stuff. So, like I said, I've irritated pretty much everybody, right, Josh? Oh, yeah, you're behind me, right? Yep. Monica could attest to that. I heard my sister laugh out loud when she tried to stifle it, but I heard it. I heard it. So I was pretty pumped, though. A few weeks ago, Kelly was on a trip in Colorado, and she sent me a picture. And I was putting this together when I was writing this. I was like, she saw the pearls that I had started to see. And she, whether or not she was looking at it because she was really that interested or she knew I would be, she still saw it. Like that out of this rock, there's this tree that's like, whoop, bend up. You know, it's got these interesting designs. See, the discipleship process has begun. Jesus is walking the trail with us, trying to get us to see. In every person, there's a story, a history, a soul, hurts, a need to know that they too are pearls being sought by a merchant who gave everything to attain them. You start seeing the pearls, you'll start bringing the kingdom. Let me pray. Father, help us to see. Father, teach me to see better, to give me eyes to see, to wonder at the stories that lie behind every heart, every life. God, help me to see people with the same value that you see them with. Help me to give them the same honor and dignity and grace that you've given to me. Father, teach me not to toss away what is holy, not to scatter pearls to the pigs. God, but to take what you've given, to take the truths that you've given and the people that you've put in my way, and to see those as pearls, to see those as precious, to see those as worthy of persistence and pressing in and loving the way that you love me, the way that you loved us. God, there are pearls in our lives that we've been missing. Could be family members, coworkers, friends, enemies, everything in between, cashiers, baristas. God, I could just get so many that we just miss. God, teach me to see. Teach me to see. Teach me to value, even though I can't talk to every single one of them. God, I can still see them.